News, I'm Victor Beatty. The Turkish currency held steady Tuesday after last week's sharp decline, but tensions between the U.S. and Turkey continue, with Ankara Wednesday announcing new tariffs on U.S. imports, including such products as vehicles, tobacco, and alcohol. The Trump administration is warning of more economic pressure if Ankara refuses to release detained Americans, including Protestant pastor Andrew Brunson. Heather Nauert is a State Department spokesperson.
I'm not going to forecast any kind of further actions or what our next steps will be, other than to say conversations continue. We've been very clear with Turkey about our expectations and our desire to have our people brought home. Pastor Brunson gets the bulk of the attention in the news and from a lot of folks, but it is just as important to us to have the NASA scientists, Sergen Golka, brought home as well as our three locally employed staff who've been working at our mission in Turkey and then have been detained for quite some time as well.
President Donald Trump is reportedly frustrated over a lack of progress in resolving the dispute. A White House official quoted as saying if no resolution is seen in a matter of days or a week, there could be further action. Meanwhile, Turkey's foreign minister, Mevlüt Cavusoglu, warned pressure, threats, and sanctions only lead to chaos and a decline in relations. He called for dialogue. Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita's campaign says it won re-election based on their vote count in a runoff with his opponent, former finance minister Soumaila Cisse, who said the vote was fraudulent. He said he rejects the results.
La mission de l'Union européenne appelle les candidats.
European Union observer mission head Cecile Kayenge appealed for restraint and to avoid announcing estimates from each candidate ahead of the provisional results. Those are due out Wednesday. She said her mission saw no fraud but procedural irregularities. This is VOA News. In Genoa, Italy, firefighters search for survivors and bodies after a motorway bridge collapsed, killing at least 26 people. Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte said the death toll will increase, described the collapse as an incredible tragedy. A 50-meter-high section of the bridge crashed down with as many as 35 vehicles on it. At least 15 were injured, 9 critically. In London, a man deliberately drove a car into pedestrians and cyclists Tuesday morning before ramming into security barriers. Outside Parliament, 3 people were injured. The driver, a 29-year-old British citizen, was arrested. Neil Bazo is the Metropolitan Police Assistant Commissioner.
Given that this appears to be a deliberate act, the method, and this being an iconic site, we are treating it as a terrorist incident, and the investigation is being led by officers from the Counter-Terrorism Command.
The man's identity has not been released. The motive is not clear. Malta relented Tuesday, saying it will allow the rescue ship Aquarius to dock after being left at sea for days with more than 140 migrants rescued off Libya's coast. Sophie Beau is director of the SOS Méditerranée France, which cooperates the vessel.
Of course, we are relieved that there is a solution coming for the 141 people that are currently on board the Aquarius. Secondly, we hope that this will be a start for a coordinated response at European level. We believe that the issue must be tackled at European level, that it's not only a problem that can be faced by one country.
The migrants will be taken in by France, Germany, Luxembourg, Portugal, and Spain. In Venezuela, the chief prosecutor said 2 higher-ranking military officers are among those arrested for their alleged roles in drone explosions during a speech by President Nicolas Maduro August 4 that Mr. Maduro said was an assassination attempt.
Ayer lunes 13 de agosto, hace apenas una
Tariq William Saab said the 2 officers were presented to court Monday. They're among 14 apprehended, including a lawmaker. Several others are still at large, including in Colombia and the U.S. The incident took place against the backdrop of Venezuela's deepening economic, political, and social crisis. A bus carrying travelers from Colombia and Venezuela crashed in Ecuador early Tuesday, killing 24, injuring 18. The bus was heading downhill on a highway when it struck another vehicle and overturned. In Japan, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe sent a ritual offering to a controversial war shrine, marking the 73rd anniversary of the end of World War II, but did not visit the Yasukuni Shrine, which has anchored China and South Korea. Emperor Akihito, who is to abdicate his throne next year, also expressed deep remorse over the country's role in the conflict. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 15th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Mali's president claims victory in Sunday's runoff election, but the opposition rejects the result.
What we are asking them is to accept that the results were not fair. And therefore, we are warning the government not to release fraudulent results.
Tibele Dramemi is campaign director for opposition candidate Soumaila Cisse of Mali. Nigeria's Elections Commission registers 91 political parties ahead of the 2019 election. Ugandans want answers for the arrest of a member of parliament and the murder of his driver. And why is Eastern DRC conducive for the spread of Ebola?
That environment is really conducive for Ebola to transmit freely. Because in that area there are places called red zones, and these red zones could be hiding places for Ebola.
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is World Health Organization chief. Zambia imposes a tax on internet telephone calls, and Sierra Leone marks 1 year anniversary of a mudslide disaster that killed more than 1,000 people. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Mali, opposition presidential candidate Soumaila Cisse says he will not accept the outcome of Sunday's presidential runoff election because they are rigged. He says election processes in the southern and northern parts of the country were tampered with. At the same time, supporters of incumbent President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta says he won the runoff election. The African Union Elections Observer Mission says the polls were conducted in acceptable conditions. Viewers Peter Clotty reached Tibele Dramimi, campaign director for opposition candidate Cisse.
What he said that he is not going to accept the result marked by irregularities and fraudulent acts. That means that he is not going to accept any result which is affected by the government actions to get President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta, the outgoing president, to be elected. This is not credible. He underlined particularly the votes in the northern part of the country, where, as you know, there is no state representation, and votes in these conditions were not sincere, were not credible. And he talked also about the elections in some part of the country in the south, where the administrations did not behave fairly.
Would he have the evidence to prove that there were some inconsistencies and voter irregularities in places that you mentioned?
Would you accept when somebody will tell you that one candidate won 10,000 votes in a place and his opponent won only one voice? This is the kind of situation we experience in many places in the northern part of the country, which was not fair at all. I wonder whether you need evidence when you were able to see this kind of results. And that happened in many places in the northern part of the country.
So what is your next line of action? Because some Malians are expressing concern that if he doesn't accept the results, there could be confusion, there could be chaos, there could possibly be violence.
You know that we've been in opposition for 5 years. And during these 5 years, we behaved democratically according to the constitution. And we were even more concerned of the situation of the country than those who are in power. This is why we do not accept the accusation of creating chaos in the country. It is fraudulent elections which will create chaos in the country, which will create instability. What we are asking them is to accept that the results were not fair and the election was not organized as it should have been. And therefore, we are warning the government not to release fraudulent results and not to put in the country in difficult situation. We have to think about it. This is why we are asking them to release the results bureau by bureau, so it would be clear for everybody what is exactly the sense of the vote. We cannot refuse to publish the results. It is a matter of transparency. And normally, in this country, everybody should accept to be clean and transparent. if they refuse to publish results bureau by bureau, what mean by they have something to hide?
Tibele Dlamini is campaign director for Mali's opposition candidate Soumaila Cisse. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Bamako. The Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, of Nigeria says it has registered a total of 91 political parties ahead of the 2019 presidential election. Meanwhile, the commission has extended the voter registration exercise by 2 weeks. It was slated to conclude this Friday, August 17. Rotimi Oyekami, Chief Press Secretary to INEC Chairman Mahmoud Yakubu, says Nigeria's constitution does not put a limit on the number of political parties as long as they meet the legal requirements.
The commission had received about 144 applications from associations seeking to be registered as political parties. And with the registration of 23 new ones, that brings the total number of political parties in Nigeria to 91. That's what we have. The names are as diverse as you can think of. We have names like Advanced Alliance Party. We have Advanced Nigeria Democratic Party. We have African Action Congress and so on and so forth up to 23. And now they have a chance of contesting in next year's general election.
Rotimi, I know this is democracy. 91 political parties. Is this unusual when it comes to Nigeria?
Well, you know, everything we do is according to the law. The constitution does not put a limit to the number of political parties that can be registered. What we have is a set of criteria for associations seeking to register. And once they meet this criteria, we must register them. There was a time that an attempt was made to limit the number of political parties. But if you don't register them and they go to court, and in any case, a number of these political parties actually got registered by court order, and there's nothing INEC can do about that.
The commission has also extended the continuous voter registration. Why?
Our electoral law 2010, as amended, stipulates that registration of voters must be on continuous basis. And between that time and now, we have registered over 11.4 million Nigerians. You know, we have almost 70 million registered voters as of 2015. And if you add the new voters that we registered between last year and now, it will be about 80 million. Now, we decided to cut off the continuous voter registration on August 17 in order to give us the time to carry out all the back-end activities necessary for us to be able to produce the permanent voters' cards that are required for people to be able to vote in the general elections next year. But there were appeals and maybe a sort of blackmail that if we indeed cut it off on August 17, it would be like disenfranchising a lot of Nigerians. And after today's meeting, a decision was taken to extend it to the 31st of August.
On Monday this week, the opposition People's Democratic Party went to press complaining of what it called your commission's silence. It alleged that it discovered thousands of its permanent voter cards at the private residence of President Buhari's kinsmen. Was that ever brought to your attention?
Well, you know, we are used to all sorts of allegations. I think we are the whipping boy in the political space in this country. In the first place, there is no such thing. You know, we had the rumor that some permanent voter cards were discovered in some place, but it is not true at all.
Are you aware of multiple registration complaints coming in from other places?
We are aware that people complain of multiple registrations, but we are taking adequate steps to arrest that. Some Nigerians really don't know that it is quite an offense to register twice. But we have a system. Our server has the ability to discover because we are going to capture your 10 fingerprints. So if you register twice, our server will point you out.
Rotimi, thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much for having me.
Rotimi Oyekami is the Chief Press Secretary to Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission Chairman, Mahmoud Yakubu. He was speaking with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Today's Wednesday, August 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Please send your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Today, Wednesday, is Uganda's hotly contested parliamentary by-election for Arua Municipality in northern Uganda. Campaigning took a violent turn on Monday evening when unknown assailants shot and killed the driver of MP Bobby Wine. A window in President Yoweri Museveni's car was smashed in the chaos. Police have since arrested two journalists and dozens of opposition supporters, an act that human rights groups are calling an abuse of power. Halima Adumani reports from Kampala.
Violence rocked the Arua district of northern Uganda on Monday as President Yoweri Museveni and legislator Robert Kyagulanyi, commonly known as Bobi Wine, campaigned for candidates in the by-election. The chaos erupted just after candidates and their supporters were heading back to their offices and homes after campaigning. Shortly after, Kyagulanyi tweeted, "Police have shot my driver dead, thinking they've shot at me. My hotel is now cordoned off by police and Special Forces Command. The Special Forces Command protects the president." Presidential spokesman Don Wanyama also tweeted, posting photos of Museveni's armored car with the hind window completely smashed. The spokesman said the president's car had been attacked by opposition supporters. Museveni was said to be uninjured. Speaking Tuesday, police spokesperson Emilian Kaima blamed opposition legislators for attacking the president's car.
Supporters of candidate Kassiano Wadri, with imported support groups led by members of parliament Robert Kyagulanyi, Francis Zake, Paul Mwiri, Gerard Karuhanga, and the former MP Michael Mavike, obstructed and violently attacked the presidential motorcade, during which one of the vehicles bearing the presidential coat of arms had its windscreen smashed.
There was no immediate comment from the lawmakers who remained in police custody. Kaima said a total of 34 people have been arrested, including journalists Herbert Ziwa and Mwanga Ronald, who were reporting on Tuesday's violence. Police have charged the two with inciting violence and malicious damage. Robert Sempala, the national coordinator of the Human Rights Network for Journalists, decried the arrest.
"This is certainly abuse of power. It's abuse of office. It is acting with impunity. But we also think that it points to an election that is certainly riddled with injustices, or that is likely to be not free and not fair."
The hotly contested seat in Arua fell vacant after the assassination of Arua municipality legislator Ibrahim Abiriga in June. 12 candidates are vying to replace him. Some Ugandans are asking why Bobi Wine's driver, Yasin Kaoma, was shot and killed. Expedito Sebaiga is a resident of Arua.
"The security owes an explanation to Ugandans in respect to the circumstances under which this innocent young man was shot dead. I'm convinced that he was parked, and being that he was just seated in the vehicle, for what reason was such a person shot?"
The by-election is set for Wednesday, with the ruling National Resistance Movement Party, led by Museveni, fighting to retain the seat. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the raging conflict in North Kivu makes the Ebola outbreak in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo more dangerous than the historic 2014-2015 epidemic in West Africa. More than 11,000 people died from the Ebola virus before the time it was contained in 2016. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
WHO Director General Tedros returned Sunday from a visit to Beni and Mangina, the epicenters of the Ebola outbreak in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. He says he was worried before he went on this mission, but he is more worried now after having observed firsthand the dangers and difficulties posed by the active conflict in North Kivu. He says more than 100 armed groups operate in the region. He says there have been 120 violent incidents this year involving killings, kidnappings, rapes, and other atrocities.
"That environment is really conducive for Ebola actually to transmit freely, because in that area there are places called red zones, inaccessible areas, because there are many armed groups that operate in that region, and these red zones could be hiding places for Ebola."
Tedros is calling on the warring parties for a cessation of hostilities, warning this extremely contagious virus is dangerous for everyone. Despite the many concerns, he says WHO and partners are moving ahead aggressively with the operation to contain this deadly virus. He says more than 216 health workers and 20 people from the community have been vaccinated against Ebola. He says more vaccinators have been deployed from Guinea to speed this process along, and DRC authorities have given the green light for the use of several experimental Ebola drugs. Tedros says health workers have begun working on case identification and contact tracing, as well as community outreach and educational programs. He says WHO is working with countries neighboring DRC and is helping Uganda, Burundi, Rwanda, and South Sudan strengthen their surveillance and screening programs to try to prevent the deadly Ebola virus from crossing their borders. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zambians are expressing concern about a cabinet decision that imposes a tax on internet telephone calls. This after the government announced plans to introduce a 30% a day tariff for each call made through WhatsApp, Viber, Facebook, and other social media. But the bloggers of Zambia and the Zambian chapter of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, known as MISA, say the government's decision is an affront to net neutrality and affordable connectivity. VOA's Peter Clotty reached Rachel Mulonga, leader of the bloggers of Zambia in the capital, Lusaka.
The decision by the Zambian cabinet to propose a tariff on the internet calls, what we call voice over internet protocol, has caused a lot of consternation and a lot of mixed reactions from consumers here, because people that it is a double taxation, if you like, because people already spend on bundles, what you call data, or they also spend and they pay VAT on the airtime. So to have another tariff on top of that is an abuse for people's freedom of expression. And people are saying that why should we be paying more taxes now than ever before? Because this government already promised us low taxes, but I think more taxes, and now they're even following us on the internet where we want to get ourselves.
The phone networks are saying that because of these problems of people using other means to communicate, their revenue is down. If their revenue is down, they can't pay enough taxes for the government to use to improve the lives of Zambia. So some think this is a good idea, particularly supporters of the PF. What do you say to that?
But we have not been shown or given any evidence that there was a complaint from the mobile service providers that they are running losses because people are making internet calls. In any case, we expect that the government must be encouraging people to use the internet more than ever before, because the internet is bringing more good in the economy than anything else. But aside from that, mobile service providers in Zambia are charging us too much for airtime and data, so we do not expect that they are making losses. Recently, the Zambia Information and Communications Authority fined the three mobile service providers in Zambia for offering poor services. So people are resorting to the internet where they want to make cheaper and quality calls.
So what is the next line of action with your group and MISA in Zambia to take, because the government intends to implement this new tax very soon?
We are involved in an advocacy campaign called Open Space Day on Twitter, and we are also engaging with the government. We are urging them to relook at some of these decisions that they are making regarding the internet regulation and these tariffs. It's not too late. We can negotiate. We can still come to the table and dialogue and come up with decisions that are in the interest of the people, in the interest of the internet users and everyone else. But if that fails, we will be left with no option but to do a legal analysis and go the legal way and try to get an injunction to try and derail the process and stop it. And because, look, Zambians are spending so much on so many commodities, and the internet is one of them that must not be made so expensive.
Richard Mulonga is the leader of the bloggers of Zambia. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from Lusaka. A year ago yesterday, Tuesday, in Sierra Leone, more than 1,000 people lost their lives and about 6,000 more displaced when a mudslide struck a hilltop town on the outskirts of the capital, Freetown. Today, some of those affected say they still don't have a place to call home. On the one-year anniversary of the disaster, the Sierra Leone government organized an interfaith service to pray for the dead and survivors. Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Swari says President Julius Mada Bio, speaking during the service, banned the construction of houses on Sugarloaf Mountain, as well as the cutting of trees on the mountain for firewood.
Well, today, the interfaith service was graced by His Excellency President Julius Mada Bio, who was chief mourner. In attendance was the Vice President, members of the diplomatic and consular corps, culturalians from all walks of life, and survivors and relations of victims, and generally people who are interested in the serenity of our country. Many things have been done to ensure that we do not go down this path. In his speech, His Excellency President Julius Mada Bio made it categorical that there is enough blame to go around, and he did not want to dwell on that. So he made very categorical pronouncements, including the banning with immediate effect all building and construction works on the Sugarloaf Mountain, the conscript, the additional ban of timber of firewood and any related activities, stone mining, and all of those activities have been banned with immediate effect. He made it clear that any defaulters will be prosecuted, and where it involves construction, those buildings will be demolished using due process of the law.
I know you said, Mr. Minister, that there's enough blame to go around. Was there any compensation promised to these people who lost their homes, their relatives died? Was there any compensation by the government?
Well, this government is a compassionate government. We are a government with a human face. About a month or so ago, we had early warning signs from UNOPS and one of our development partners, UN agencies, who gave us warning that another disaster was in the offing if urgent and immediate steps were not taken to avert it. Even in our very difficult financial situation, the government spent 8 billion leon to ensure that we relocate 86 households that were deemed to be in the red zone, just to ensure that we took all Sierra Leoneans away from harm's way. Yes, this government is caring. We are passionate. We do not want to wait till another mudslide where we could call on the international community and the donor community to come around to support us. This time, we have been proactive to ensure that we don't preside over another monumental disaster.
Mr. Minister, thank you. It's so nice to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, my brother. It's always a pleasure.
Mohamed Rahman Swari is Sierra Leone's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. In Mali, opposition presidential candidate Soumaila Cisse says he will not accept the outcome of Sunday's presidential runoff election because they are rigged. He says election processes in the southern and northern parts of the country were tampered with. At the same time, supporters of incumbent President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta say he won the runoff election. A year ago yesterday, Tuesday, in Sierra Leone, more than 1,000 people lost their lives and about 6,000 more displaced when a mudslide struck a hilltop town on the outskirts of the capital, Freetown. Today, some of those affected say they still don't have a place to call home. On the one-year anniversary of the disaster, the Sierra Leone government organized an interfaith service to pray for the dead and survivors. Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Swari says President Julius Mada Bio, speaking during the service, banned the construction of houses on Sugarloaf Mountain as well as the cutting of trees on the mountain for firewood. That's it for this Wednesday, August 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you to join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Barnes, I'm James Butter, wishing you a very good day.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.